Right, we're holding on page 128 in Titus, Ois Mem Zayin. We learned yesterday about how, at one point, Rav Huna used the source of Rav Adar Bar Ava to prevent a building from collapsing. And Rav Adar Bar Ava objected to that because you don't stand in a place which is dangerous and expect that a nest is going to happen. Either a nest won't happen or schosim are going to be taken off. So now the Gemara wants to stress, don't think that Rav Huna was any slouch when it comes to schosim either. He also had tremendous schosim, but still he figured that Rav Adar Bar Ava is great. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Rava the Rafrim Bar Papa Leimalon Mar Rebbe, would you tell us Mehani Mili Mal Yusa some of the wonderful things, some of the great things in Sidkus to have Obed Rav Huna that Rav Huna used to do?" Amalei, the Pashtus Rafrim Bar Papa was one of Rav Huna's Talmidim, so he was one of his close Talmidim, so he would be able to tell. Amalei, so he says, "Biyam Kosei Lo Dechuna, things that he did when he was younger." I don't remember, but I remember things that he did when he was older. The Gemara, by the way, mentions in Murid Katan that Rav Huna lived to be over 80 years old. So he had a long life, a long career. Rav Shura Goin also mentions in his Igeres, he was Rosh Yeshiva there in Surah. He was the head Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel, particularly in the Yeshiva of Surah, for 40 years, and he was tremendously powerful. He was also well-connected, and so forth. So to call Yoma de Iva, so Rafram says, every on any cloudy day, have a makin lebe guharka de dava. They would carry Rav Huna around the city in a guharka made of gold. And Rashi explains that a guharka is a litter. It's like when you have a seat that's attached to poles and people carry the poles on their shoulders and the person is sitting over there in the seat. Sometimes they have like an enclosure around it. Rashi describes that in his times, noble women in Germany would sit in such things and be carried around. So he'd be carried around in such a thing. The sire, why a golden one? We'll talk about soon. The sire of the Kula Masa, and he would go inspect all the buildings in the city. The Cholashisa to have us Reisa. Whenever there was a shaky wall, this is the context over here in the Gemara, where the Mishnah had talked about walls that are collapsing, and where there's enough of them that it's an epidemic of collapses in the city, and therefore you have to fast and daven. But the Gemara had said if the walls are anyway rickety, then you don't have to, because normal they're going to fall down. But here, this actually connects with today's Daf Yomi as well, because there was something in a Mishnah out there about where a person has like that a rickety wall, and Beis Din tells him it's time to tear it down before it causes a hezek, and they give him a certain grace period, and if he doesn't tear it down during that time, then he's chayev for any hezek it causes. Anyway, so any wall that was shaky, that was unstable, have a soso law. Rav Huna would tear it down, or he'd have servants tear it down. Im efshel amara, if the owner of that wall had the financial means, boni law, then he would go rebuild it himself. The im law, and if the guy couldn't afford, then Rav Huna would pay for the reconstruction of the wall out of his own funds. But this way, he makes sure that there are never any of these rickety walls over there that could collapse and injure or kill people. So that's Ben Yehoyada says. That's why he was going around in this golden litter. Why daft gold? Not everybody in the city is Jews. There were Goyisha landowners over there as well. They're not Mela, the Jews, when Rav Huna is saying, I have to tear down the wall and reconstruct it, then fine, they're going to listen. The Goyim aren't going to necessarily. But when they see these riding around in a golden carriage like that, then they're going to have a little derech eretz for him, and they're going to know they have to follow what he's saying. Why daft a cloudy day? Because then it's more likely that it's going to rain, and there it's going to be rainy or windy, and it's more likely that such walls would collapse. Another thing Rav Huna would do is every Erev Shabbos, when it was late in the day, having a Shadr Shmucha L'Shuka, he would send a messenger to the market, B'chol Yarka, to have a Yat of the Ginai. Anytime the greengrocers had leftover vegetables, Zabin Lahu, he would buy them, B'shodi Lahu Benara, and he would throw them into the river. Now, why would he do? Well, you have to ask about both things. Why is he buying up the surplus, and why is he throwing into the river? That the Gemara deals with over here. So the question is, once he's buying up the vegetables anyway, why not give them to the poor? By the way, as far as the walls, by the way, Marchand says that actually, no, if the wall was really shaky and was in danger of collapsing at any moment, then he wouldn't necessarily give the expenses, even if the guy was poor, to rebuild it. Because actually, you're talking about, in that case, really, he's doing better for the guy. The house could collapse on the owner of the house himself at any moment. We're talking about it's shaky, but it's like the one we learned yesterday, which was standing there for 13 years and had never yet collapsed. But so that was the kind that Rav Huna would say, you know what? It might last a long time, but it might not. So therefore, since you're poor and you were putting it off because you figure it's lasted this long, it might continue. Then fine, I'll do tzedakah for you and I'll rebuild it for you. Okay, so back to the vegetables. So the question is, why not give the vegetables to the poor people? Omar, because Rav Huna figured to himself, because then they may come to depend on it. And then they're not going to come by to begin with on Erev Shabbos because they're going to figure there's going to be always leftovers and Rav Huna will give them to us for free. You want to give tzedakah, but you want to do it in a way that doesn't make people dependent. Why doesn't Rav Huna give the leftover vegetables to animals to eat? He has his own animals, for example, he was rich. Now the Rif points out, you could say, well, then the owner of the animal is gonna think that then he's gonna depend on it, and then you're gonna have tzar bala chayim. So he gives a reason why that's not a problem, but Ben Yehoyada says, never mind that. He could be giving it to his own animals. And he's gonna know that he can't depend on it, and therefore he has to still feed him anyway. Anyway, the answer is Sova, Rav Huna figured, Rav Huna holds the halacha, Michael Odom and Machila Noisil Behem. Food that can be eaten by people, you're not allowed to give to animals. Rashi says for two reasons. First of all, to be zoyin to food. It looks like you're kicking against and protesting against the good that Hashem gave and saying, I don't need it. I'm just going to give it to the animals. The other reason is Torah chos al mamon and shor Yisrael. What about then on the faith? The Torah is concerned about Jewish money, that it shouldn't be wasted. On the face of it, throwing it in the river is not any better. Rashi explains it's not, because the river is going to carry them downstream. They're not going to get sunk in the bottom of the river. They're vegetables. They're going to float. So therefore, they'll float someplace else, and the poor people there will pick it up and they'll eat it after all, so it won't go to waste. And you're not going to say that they're going to come to rely on it, because you never know. Obviously, the current is going to go every which way, and there's no dependability that they can get it, so therefore there's no problem that the people downstream are going to end up being dependent on it. By the way, this concept of Michael Odomein, Machil and Oysel Behema, most of the poskim don't bring it. The Magen Avraham brings it in Hilchos Soda, but none of the other poskim do. The Alter Rebbe, we don't know, because those simonim are missing in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. So it seems like most poskim hold that the halacha is not necessarily like Rav Huna in that. What about Veloy Zabne Klal? Well, then why is Rav Huna buying it in the first place? Why not buy it at all? And the answer is that's going to cause the greengrocers are going to not want to do it in the future. They're going to say, why should we bother bringing vegetables to town to sell when we're going to be left with a surplus? Mela Rashi says, if it's during the week, no problem. They can always sell them tomorrow. But if they have leftovers on Friday, they can't keep them till Sunday and have refrigerators. So therefore, they'd end up spoiling. And therefore, they might hold back and say, we don't want to bring vegetables, or at least not so many, to begin with, to town on Erev Shabbos. And then people are not going to be able to buy good vegetables for Shabbos. So therefore, he wanted to encourage them to have a nice supply, the greengrocers to have a nice supply, and therefore buy up the surplus, but on the other hand, not make the aniyim dependent on it. So that was another thing that Rav Huna would do. Another thing, Raphram Bapapa continues, Kad Havale Milsadas Vasa, when Rav Huna had available some kind of medicine, have a moli kuza de maya, he would fill up a jug full of de maya, means of water, but actually a different gear says kuza mine, he would fill up a jug of it. But what good would water do at that point? It means he would fill up a jug with that medicine, the toli le besifa de besa, and he would hang it by the threshold of his house, the omar, and he would announce, called it sorich, or deboy, leise velishko, anybody who needs it, come and get it. So this way he was giving out medicine for free. Ikadamri, others say, milsa de shivsa have a gummer. Another explanation is rather that specifically he was familiar with the habits of Shivsa. Rashi explains, based on a Gemara in Yuma, that Shivsa is a shed that attacks people who eat without washing their hands, eat bread without washing their hands. So he was familiar with the habits of that shed and how it's prone to attack people who don't do Netilas Yadayim. Now, you have to remember, you know, for us, it's not a big chiddush. You go over to the sink and you fill up a cup of water and you wash until it's dying. Back then, you know, we had to get your water from the river or draw it from the river or from a well or whatever. It wasn't that easy for your average person to have water available on the spot. So he knew about that. So therefore have a gomer, so have milsa the shifts have a gomer, vamanach like koza de maya. So if you take a jug of water, the tolilea ibrid the dosha, and he would hang it by the bolt of the door, or a different version, vidolilei, he would hang it up over there. But omer, and he would announce, kol mandat sarich leil v'leisu. Anybody who needs water to wash can come in and take kiehikadalov snack in. This way when they're eating, they won't come to sakana through that shed. And another thing Rav Huna would do, he have a korich rifta, when he was eating, korich rifta literally means wrapping bread, because you know their bread was like pitas or tortillas or whatever, and he would wrap it around the filling. So when he was eating a meal, have a posach ladosha, Rav Huna would open up the door of his house, but Omer, and he would announce, kol mandat tzorich leisiv aleichal, like we do by the Seder. Anybody who needs, come and eat. Omar Rava, so now when Rava heard this whole report from Rasa and Bapapa, he says, kulu matsinim akayam. When it comes to all those things, I would be able to mekayim them as well. Rava was also rich. He was the Rosh Hashiva in his city. He would also be able to accomplish all these things. With the exception of that last one about inviting anybody to come and eat with him, that I wouldn't be able to do. Because there are many bnei chela in mechuza. Rashi does not have the word chela, he just has the word bnei mechuza. There are many people in mechuza, which is where Rava was the Rosh Hashiva. Rashi explains there are many poor people. So if I open my house every time and announce it, called the chvin yezav yechel, they'll eat me out of the, they'll eat up everything I have. Marsha, on the other hand, has the girsa chela, and says that no, and besides which we find in various other places in Shas, that fakert, in mechuza, the people on the whole were very rich. So no, what it means is, Marsha says, bnei chela means the soldiers in the army. You have one of the amendments to the Constitution is you can't quarter troops in people's houses except during wartime. Well, they didn't have a third amendment to the Constitution. So anytime the government could order you to quarter soldiers in your house and you have to supply them with food, there's a Gemara that relevant to that in Beitza and in other places. So therefore, Rava is saying, there are so many soldiers around here, and when I announce that my home is open to everybody to come and eat, they're all going to come and invade my house, and I don't have enough food to give to all of them. Okay. Further on, the Gemara continues talking about stories involving tzaddikim. Again, this is why this parak is called Pirkei Dachsidi, and also a story involving a rickety wall. Ilfa v'Rab Yechanan have a garsi ba'uraisa. Ilfa and Rab Yechanan were learning Torah together. They were in very dire straits. They were very poor. Omru, so they thought to themselves, Nekum v'nezel v'navid iska, let's get up and leave our full-time learning for a while, and we'll go start a business. And with that, we'll be able to be mekayim in ourselves. But the pasuk says, "Efes ki lo yavcha ebyon." The pasuk says, "However, there will not be any poor people among you." Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk is that it's a promise. Hashem is saying, when you fulfill what the Eibishter wants, then there won't be any poor people among you. But the Gemara in Bava Metzia also understands, and Ilfa and Rabbi Yechanan also understood it to be a tzivui. You should make sure that you yourself don't become poor. So they figured, in that case, we have a responsibility to do that. So sure enough, they went and to go engage in business. Isibu tuse gudereia. One time they were sitting next to a rickety wall. Now they didn't know that it was rickety. If it is, they wouldn't have sat there. But they didn't know. But it wasn't stable. Habukarchi rifter. They're sitting over there and wrapping their bread and eating. Also tre malachei asharis. Two malachei asharis came along. Shame Rabbi Yochanan, the Ka'am Achad L'Chavrei, Rabbi Yochanan overhears the conversation between the Malachim. He hears one of them saying to the other, Nishdi Alayu Hayaguda, we should knock down this wall on these two. V'niktalinu, and we should kill them. Shamanichin Chaya Olam Abba V'Oskin B'Chaya Shah. They're abandoning the life of the world. Olam Abba is exactly what it means. Chaya Olam also means the Torah, like we say in Davening, V'Chaya Olam Nata B'Sechenu. So they're abandoning that, V'Oskin B'Chaya Shah, and they're involving themselves with temporary life in this world, with business. Why two malachim? Marsha says, just like we have, for example, you have the two malachi asharis that accompany a person. One is defending him, and the other is accusing over him. So here, so it's the accusing malach that's saying that we should do that. Omale idach, the other one who is the defending malach, answers, Shavkinu, leave them alone. Don't do that. De'ikabahu chad de'kaimale shaita. There's one of these two where the hour is standing for him, meaning in other words, it's his time, Rashi explains. He's destined to become great. It's not his time to die yet. So it means, in other words, like the schus of his future Talmidim will help protect him. Rabbi Yochanan Shoma Ilfalo Shoma. Now, Rabbi Yochanan overheard that conversation between the Malachim. Ilfalo Shoma. Ilfa did not hear it, which means that it was meant for Rabbi Yochanan's ears. So, Amalei Rabbi Yochanan Ilfa Shoma Ma'amidi, but Rabbi Yochanan didn't know that. So he asks Ilfa, did you just hear anything? Amalei Loi, no. Omar, said Rabbi Yochanan, thinks to himself, Midishami Anov, Ilfa Loi Shoma. Since I heard this and Ilfa did not hear, Shmamino di Kaimalei Shaita. That means when the second Malach said that there's one of them where Kaimalei Shaita, it's his lucky time and he's gonna become great, it must be me. It must be me that it's talking about. So Rabbi Yochanan didn't want to openly tell that to Ilfa. Instead, he tells him, Omalei Rabbi Yochanan, Ihadar, you know what? Let me return. I'm going to return to full-time learning. V'ikayim b'nafshoi, I will be Makai. Now, we first left because we were thinking of the pasuk Lo Yiyah B'cha'evyin. Instead, actually, I'm going to be Makayim myself in a different pasuk. You have a different pasuk in the same parak. You have a few pasukim later. Kila yechdal evyin v'kerev ha'aretz. There will never cease to be poor people in the land. Meaning there's always going to be poor, there's always going to be poor people among the Jews. So another one now. Simple meaning is Rashi explains on the Psukim, one is when Oisin Ritzoni Shamakim, the other is not. The Rashba gives an explanation that one is when people are giving tzedakah and the other is not. Whatever the case, Rabbi Yochanan points out, the fact is you have a pasuk that implies that there are always going to be poor people. Fine, I'll be one of those poor people. I'm learning Torah full time. Rabbi Yochanan Hodr, Ilfa Le Hodr, sure enough, Rabbi Yochanan returned to the Beis Medrash, Ilfa did not. Ad Osa Ilfa, by the time Ilfa returned, Molach Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan became the Rosh Yeshiva. Molach means he became a king. And in a few places in Shas, we have, and Rav Shira Goin regularly uses this expression in his Igeres, that when a person becomes a Rosh Yeshiva, we use the word a Molach, and he becomes the king of Torah. It means also they give him money so that he becomes rich. By the Kohen Gadol, we find that he has a Gadleu Mishal Achav, he's poor, then they have to enrich him. So the same way with Rosh Yeshiva, they would do the same kind of thing. So therefore, we use the word Molach. Omruloi. So they told Ilfa, E Yosef Marv Goris, if you Rebbe Ilfa, if you had sat here and continued to learn Torah full time, Loi have a Molech Mar, then the other Rebbe, meaning Rabbi Yochanan, would not have become the Rosh Hashiva. Because in other words, Ilfa was greater in Torah than Rabbi Yochanan, which is why at the beginning of the story we have Ilfa mentioned first. So they're telling him, you should know, you are really a greater Talmud, you're a Talmud Chacham of greater caliber than Rabbi Yochanan. It's too bad, you missed your opportunity. There's a couple of ways of understanding the phrase that they're saying. One is that one is that it's a rhetorical question. E Yosef Mar V'goris, if you had sat here and learned Loi Hava Molech Mar, wouldn't you, Rebbe, have become the Rosh Hashiva ahead of Rabbi Yochanan because you're greater than him than Torah? Or it can be a factual statement. If you had stayed here, then Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't have become the Rosh Hashiva, you would have instead. Well, Rabbi Ilfa wanted to demonstrate that his way is still correct, that the people shouldn't think like he went off the derech, people shouldn't think, whatever. So therefore, he wanted to demonstrate that he still is great in knowledge of Torah. There was actually a very interesting explanation on this from Rabbi Reuven Margolius. He points out there's a medrash someplace that says that Rabbi Yochanan actually came from a family that had money. The medrash says how one time Rabbi Yochanan is walking with one of his talmidim and they pass by this field and that vineyard and whatever, and Rabbi Yochanan, each one of them, he comments, this used to belong to me and I sold it in order that I'm not busy with these kinds of things and I can learn Torah full time. So we see Rabbi Yochanan came from a family that had money. So therefore, when he decided, you know what, so to begin with, he and Ilfa were both poor, maybe his family wasn't supporting him, whatever it is, or maybe he'd voluntarily given up their support. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is thinking to himself, you know what, after all, I have what to fall back on. If I go back and learn Torah full time, I still have, eventually, my family can come and bail me out. Mashenkin Ilfa may have been, to begin with, from a poor family, so he didn't think that he had that opportunity. But another way of looking at it is, so Ilfa may have figured, and look, it says in Pirkei Avos, Yofa Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz. So he may have figured this is the proper way to do things. So now he wants to demonstrate that his way of doing things is in fact correct. So he went and leaned against. Tola can actually mean two things. It can mean leaned or it can mean hanged. So it can mean either way, Iskaria means the mast, the sphincter of a ship. So he went to a ship. He climbed up the mast on it. And he Tola would mean he was hang. It would mean that he Tola would either mean that he's leaning against it, or it means that he suspended himself from it. Anyway, Omar, and he announced, if anybody can bring me something and ask me something from a braisa that Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia taught, and I can't clarify how this point is hinted at in a Mishnah, Nafilnam Iskariya Desfinta Vatabina, then I will fall off the mast and I will drown. Meaning what he means that he'll drown, we'll talk about in a second. A yid's obviously not allowed to commit suicide, so we'll get back to that in a second. But what he means is, in other words, like this. The Mishnah, we know, contains the basics of Torah Shabbat Peh. The Braises that were written afterward, that were composed by the Priya and Reb Oshia, they're not adding anything to the Mishnah. What they're doing, many times, you'll have something the Gemara will point out. You have a line or a phrase, you have a word or a line in a Mishnah from which we can deduce a certain din, and then a Braises will spell it out more clearly. And Reb Priya and Reb Oshia put together a collection of such reliable Braises, and that became what's printed in the back of every Masechta of the Gemara as the Tosefta. So therefore, Ilfa is telling us, the fact is, anything that says in the Tosefta is not something that Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia came up with on their own. In fact, the Gemara in a couple of places has the expression, "V'chi Rebbe lo shna, Reb Chiya minayin lo." If Rebbe didn't teach this concept, where would Reb Chiya know it from? So therefore, Ilfa is saying, I can actually show, if you bring me any braisa from Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia, I can demonstrate how a din that it says in that braisa is actually hinted at in the Mishnah, meaning that I have a total recall of all the Mishnayos and all the relevant halachas. So, and if not, if anybody can stump me with that, then he says, I'll fall off the mast and drown. So Poshet Pshat, of course, is like he's exaggerating, saying Beloshen Guzma, that he's so certain of himself. There is an interesting explanation. First of all, there's a Ben Yehoyada gives an explanation. The name Ilfa itself is actually the Aramaic word for a ship. So he's saying, I myself am like the ship. I was going on ships and going in faraway places to earn my living. But you should know, I'm higher than the rest of the ship, just as the mast is. In fact, the rest of the ship can be makabel tuma. The ship, the mast cannot, because normally people don't climb up on it. So I'm actually on a higher level, and therefore I'm so certain of that I'm issuing this challenge to anybody. Another explanation is also, when he says I'll fall off and drown, doesn't mean literally to drown. Obviously, a yid's not allowed to do that. He means fine. If anybody can stump me like that, then I will say, you know what? I agree. My derech of Yofa Talmud Torah and derech Eretz is wrong, and Rabbi Yochanan's was right after all. And fine, I'll abandon my business ventures and I'll throw myself back into the sea of Torah full time. So Osahu Saba, a certain old Talmud Chacham came, and there's a Tosfos in Cholin that says that maybe every time it says Ahu Saba refers to Eliyahu Navi, Tanalei, and he taught him, he quoted to him the following Braisa, Haimatnu Shekel of Vonai Befola, of a case where a person before he passes away gives instruction about how much of his estate should be doled out weekly to his Yoshim, because he wants to make sure they don't fritter it all away. So when do we follow exactly what he says, and when do we not? The whole Braisa over there, and Ilfa ends up explaining to him that this is all hinted at, a whole din, that whole detailed braisa is all hinted at in a few words in a Mishnah where the mayor says mitzvah l'kayim divra mes, the mitzvah to fulfill the instructions of a mess. So he passed the test. He was able to show that such a braisa that has a whole detailed din that you're never going to find anywhere in a Mishnah is in fact hinted at in a few words of a Mishnah. More about rickety houses. The Gemara says, "Omru olam Nochum Mishgamzu, shay sumim beiz einav Nochum Mishgamzu," which we're going to have the story about him soon with the famous story with the chest of jewels. That story is much better known. This one maybe less so. This one is not really one that you can easily tell the little kids. Anyway, shaya sumim beiz einav. He was blind in both eyes. The Gidim Mishtei Yodav, he was an amputee, both hands had to be amputated. The Kiteya Mibez Vaglov, both his feet had to be amputated also. The Hogufa Molishtin, and whatever was left of his body was covered with boils. He's lying over there in bed in a shaky house. The legs of the bed were placed inside basins of water, so that ants don't crawl on him, because since he doesn't have any hands or legs, he wouldn't be able to brush off any ants. So they had to make sure that ants don't get to him in the first place. So they had to have the legs of the bed in basins of water. So that's how bad off he was. It was in a very miserable situation. And hoisa again, so pamachas hoisa mitos munachs baisruah. So again, his house, his bed is one time in this rickety house, and this talmidim are concerned that it may collapse on him. Dikshu talmidim vafanes mitosay. So the talmidim wanted to take out the bed first with him on it. Vachakach vafanes akelim, and then to clear out the furniture, get him out as soon as possible, and that way, in case the place collapses, worse comes to worse, we'll lose the furniture and the other things, but at least Nochum's life will be saved. Omalahem, so he tells them, similar to the story we had before with Rav Adar Bar Abba, Bonai Panuas Akelim. No, he says, my Talmidim, first clear away the furniture, Vachakach Panuas Mitosi, then you can take out my bed, Shemuv Dachalchem. You can be guaranteed, Kolzman Shani Babayas, as long as I am inside this building, Ein Abayas Neufel, the house won't collapse on me. He knew that he's the level, he knew that he's on the level of a tzaddik gomer, where, like we learned yesterday, he's beyond the usual rules of Teva, and therefore the house is definitely going to stay standing as long as he's in there. So sure enough, Pinuas Akelim. So sure enough, they cleared out the furniture and the other things. Va'achakach Pinuas Mitosei. The last thing was they took out his bed. V'nafal Abayis, and sure enough, only then the house collapsed. Omru le'Talmidav Rebbe v'chime'achash a tzaddik gomer ata. Well, if you're on the level of a tzaddik gomer, lama also l'chokach. Then why did you end up in this situation? Fine, even a tzaddik gomer should be tzaddik v'toivla. He has all good in this world. Even he's going to have little yisurim. Fine, but not to the extent that you're having. What happened? Omalahem, so he tells them, bonai ani garamti la'atzmi. I caused it for myself. What happened was, Shapam Achasuisa Mahalach Baderech Leves Chomi. One time I was traveling on the road to go to my father-in-law's house. I had with me three donkeys loaded up with things. But Mashto's presents that he's going to be giving to his Kala and his Az Mechotonim and all. Echad Shal Michael, one was loaded up with food. The Echad Shal Mishta, one with drinks. The Echad Shal Minim Agodim, and another one with all kinds of delicacies. But only echad v'amali baderech, a poor person came and stood in my path in the road. V'amali Rebbe panaseni, he says, Rebbe, please feed me. Amauti lo, I told him, hamten atche efrik menachamer. Wait until I unload the packages from the donkey, and then I can give you something. Lo yispakti lifrik menachamer atche yotze nishmasei. I didn't even have the chance to unload the donkey, and the guy passed away. He was like a little on his last legs, and Nochum hadn't realized that. Ben Yehoyada suggests that maybe the guy was suffering from a disease that we talked about in Yuma called bulmus, which is where a person has it. So whether it's low blood sugar or whatever it is, based on the symptoms, the Gemara says whether like a person needs to eat immediately, otherwise his life is in danger. And that was this guy's situation. So halachti even a falti alponav, I went and fell on his face in grief of Amarti, and I said, you know what, I should have acted faster. I should have, for example, instead of waiting to unload the donkey, I should have just ripped open one of the packages and right away given him something. So instead he says, Einai shalechosu aleinecha, my eyes that did not have rachmanus on your eyes, yisoymu, deserve to become blind. Now, in other words, the point is, Marsha says, when he says, he says, fine, I might have been high of some kind of onesh for that, but not necessarily to this degree, where I'm blind and amputated and so forth. This is, I caused it for myself by accepting on myself much more yisurim than by rights I should deserve. So I said, yeah, my eyes deserve to become blinded. Yodai shalechosu al yodecha, my hands, which did not have rachmanus on your hands, yisgadmu, deserve to be chopped off. Raglai shalechosu al gulacha yiskatu, the same thing with my feet. And I didn't even calm down. I was thinking to myself, there has to be more than that. Ad shamarti, until I said, kogufi yehimolishchin, not just my hands and feet and eyes, but even my whole body should be covered with boils. Omruloi, so they told him, oilonu should be nuchabakan. Woe to us that we had to see you in such a condition, that we have to see you suffering from all of that. Marsha refers to a Gemara in Moed Cotton that says, like, we should think to it when we see Yisurim that come to a tzaddik, when we see that a tzaddik passed away, we should think to himself, if even such great people had such things happen to them, imagine how much us lesser mortals. So therefore, Oyve, that we're seeing such a thing, we should be terrified that and even worse might happen to us on our level. Amalahem, he tells them, on the contrary, Olim loiri soni v'kach. It would have been bad for me if you hadn't seen me this way, if I hadn't received my onus in this world like this. I got everything and more that I needed in this world. So therefore, fakert, it's good that it's good that you're seeing. It's good that you see me in this situation. Ion Yaakov adds the point. You know, so that's a, so on the, so so before he had said he wasn't afraid the house is going to collapse on him. For the house to collapse on him would be a form of skila, which is the harshest of all the dalad misses based in. He realized as a result of his yisurim, the avera has been the minor avera that he did has been cleaned up to the point where he's certainly not going to be chayiv skila, which is why he could rely on his own schosim, unlike Rav Adar Bar Ava that we learned about yesterday, that didn't like the idea that they're putting him in a dangerous place. Nochum realized in order for that to happen, it would have to be I'd be chayiv on some level skila, and I'm not going to be after all these yisurim that I went through. So the Gemara says, "Vamai korele Nochum Mishgamzu." So why does he have that name? Now there is actually an interesting explanation that the simple reason he was called that. There's a city in Eretz Yisrael that's mentioned in Divrei Hayomim called Gimzoi. So the simple meaning is that he came from the city of Gimzoi, and therefore they call him Nochumish Gimzoi. Just like you have Yosef and Yehazar Ish Tzreda and Yosef and Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim and so forth. But the point is, they took the name Gimzoi and altered it to Gamzu because they call Milsa to have a Salkale. And whenever anything that happened to him that seemed like a negative thing, Omer Gamzu L'Tov, he would say, this too is for the good. Even though it seems negative. So what happened? A story that illustrates that. One time the Jews needed to send a gift to the emperor to get him to back off on them. Omru man Yezel, so they thought to themselves, who should go and bring it? They figured Yezel Nochumish Gamzu de Malumad Benissim. We should send Nochumish Gamzu because he's accustomed to having Nissim happen. So they sent with him a chest full of precious stones and pearls as a gift for the emperor. Ozal Bos Bahudira, he went and stayed over on the way, stayed over in a particular inn. Beloya Komu Hanach Diroi, during the night, the people who lived in the innkeepers got up, Vashaklin, they realized what was in the chest, Vashaklin or the Sifte, they took the chest and emptied out all the jewels, Omalunu Afra, and they filled it up with dust. In a different version of the story, is they asked him what's in there, and he told them whatever the case. The point is that they realized what happened, and they filled it up with dust. When he sees it the next day, he says Gamzu L'Tova. Now that's in parenthesis because it's not so simple. Does that mean he's going to actually go to the Kaiser with a chest full of dust, not knowing what's going to happen, and possibly putting all the Jews in danger? So a different way of understanding it without that parenthesis, he didn't know what happened, and he gets there, and only when they open it up in the palace does he discover what happened. Anyway, Kimota Hossam, when he got there, Sharino the Sifta, they opened up the chest, Chazino de Mola Afra, and they saw that it's full of dust. Bom Malkulinu Lakulu. The king was about to kill all the Jews. Omar, he says, Kom Chaifu bi Yehudari, they're making fun of me. They're sending me as a gift a chest of dirt. Omar Gamzu L'Tova, still Nochum said Gamzu L'Tova, the Ebishna has a way everything will work out for the good. Also, Eliyahu Idmilekachodaminayu. Eliyahu came along and appealed to the Romans as one of them, as a Roman senator or what have you. Omele, he says to the emperor, Duma ha afra ma'afra d'Avraham avuenu. Maybe this dust is not stam dust. Maybe it's dust from their ancestor Avraham. To have a shoddy afra when he was fighting against the four kings in Parshas Lech Lecha, when he would throw dust, have a saifi, then a nest would happen, and the dust that he threw would turn into swords. Gili, and he would throw pieces of straw, have a giri and bederach nest, they would become arrows. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Yitin ka'ofer charba, Hashem makes like the dust his sword, kekash nidaf kashtoi, like the wind-blown straw is his bow. So it actually means, the Medrash actually says in both ways, it means that when they would shoot arrows and spears at him, those would turn into dust and then straw. And meanwhile, it means the other way around also. When Avraham would throw his at them, then it would turn into spears and arrows. So Eliyahu, in the guise of a woman, is telling them maybe that's what's going on over here. It's not stam dust. At that point, there was one particular province where they were trying to conquer it, and they weren't able to. Bodkum in there, so they tested out the dirt that was in the box, because sure and sure enough they were able to conquer it. I lula beginze, so they took Nochum and Shigamzu into the royal treasury. They filled up the chest with precious stones and pearls, and they sent him away with great honor. Which Ben Yehoyada says the great honor also includes they sent with him a contingent of armed soldiers so that the innkeepers don't try the same thing again. He also, when he was coming back on the way, Bisu Bahu Diura, they stayed in the same inn. Omrule my Isis Badoch. So they ask him, what'd you bring with you? He kind of plays dumb. My deshakli mahocha amti lahosam. Whatever I took from here is what I brought there. So they realized, wait a minute, he brought dirt from here and he got rewarded so richly for it. Means that our dirt is something special. Sosru the didaihu, they tore down their inn, their house. Vamtino the beimalka, and they brought all of the dust to the palace, to the royal palace. Meaning, so now, in other words, they lost out for themselves. Not only they didn't just dig up the dirt around there, they lost their house as well. After the icy hocha, the dirt that was brought to you before me, didan hava, it actually came from us. But of course, they tried it out. I understand it didn't work. It was stam dirt. So they executed those innkeepers for their chutzpah in bringing fake dirt to the king.
Definition of a goyish cup.
That's a good, true definition of a goyish cup. That's true. Yeah. In fact, Ion Yaakov points out a detail in it. You know, when you get down to it. Precious stones and pearls. I mean, the emperor's got treasuries full of them. How much would it mean to him? But you bring him the special dirt, which works as spears and arrows. That's going to be something special. That's gonna be that. Once he realizes what it is, he would realize that taka is a very great gift. So Nochum had good reason to say Gamzo Batova that it worked out. The Eibush made it work out better than what we planned originally. Originally, we would have brought him precious stones. He would have said, "Okay, Oichmir, more precious stones." But like this, you bring him something that he would really sit up and take notice. So the Gzeira, whatever Gzeira was planning to do, I guess with Bato, there's a sikha, by the way, that ever talks about the idea behind. We find over here that Nochum would say Gamzu Latova, as opposed to Rabbi Akiva, who was his Talmud and learned this Mahalach with him, would say the expression in Aramaic, Koma de Obed Rachmana, the Tab Obed, everything that Hashem does, he does for the good. And there's a sikha in one of the Uri Chalok and Chelik Alok and Chelik Beis, where it ever analyzes the difference, and the difference being, one difference being, Nochum lived when the Beis Mikdash was still standing, so it, of course, is more visible in the world, therefore he could say his expression in Lashon Kodesh, as opposed to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was born when the Beis Mikdash was still standing, but most of his career is after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, so therefore things are on a lower level, and therefore he has to express the same thing in Aramaic, which is like a degraded form of Lashon Kodesh. All right. Your test 7. Chazal tell us that Mashiach bo behesach adas. That Mashiach is going to come like when we're not paying attention. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't contradict the fact that we're still thinking into and we have a das and we're connecting our das. Das, as the Alter Rebbe defines in Tanya, is that you bind your thoughts very strongly to something. We're very strongly binding our thoughts. See, in Yoni Mashiach Ugola, how does that fit with this Hesach Das? And it means that we think and we contemplate and we realize that we're already at the entrance to Yemos Mashiach, and Hinei Zebol, all the kolokola kitzin, all the kitzin are over, we've already done tshuva and finished all the avoda. So how does all this fit with Hesach Hadas? Because Hesach Hadas actually means l'mailam Hadas, the Alter Rebbe explains. So not that we're ignoring it, but on the contrary, it's on a level higher than Das. After this concept of Mashiach has permeated a person's das, he thought about it, and he contemplated it, and he understands it, and so forth, it becomes already a Hesach Hadas, it becomes even higher than das by him. And that's the level at which Mashiach comes.
That's because Mashiach is a
mile
from the das.
Mashiach is a mile from das also, yeah. Continuing on the four Rishuyas of Shabbos, so we've talked about Rishus Yochid, Rishus Rabim, and Carmelis. And then you have a Mokum Petur, which is an area in Rosh Hashanah Rabim, a small area, less than 4x4 Tfachim, at least 3 Tfachim tall, because if it's less than 3 Tfachim, then it just counts as part of Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Similarly, a pit that's less than that size and is at least 3 Tfachim deep, and other things like that. These kinds of things are a Mokum Petur when they're in Rosh Hashanah Rabim. If they're in Carmelis, then they still count as Carmelis, and if they're 10 Tfachim tall, then they count as Mokum Petur. So now, then they count as Makom Ptur. Now, Makom Ptur, you are actually allowed to transfer things from it to Rosh Hashanah Rabim or Rosh Hashanah Yachid. However, you do have to be careful not to, for example, you can't use it as an in-between thing. You can't take something from Rosh Hashanah Yachid, for example, put in a Makom Ptur, and then pick it up from there and put it in Rosh Hashanah Rabim, or vice versa. Medar Daisa, it wouldn't be a Malacha, but Medar Abanan, it's still also to do. Okay. Yeah.